The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Abraham Donko. In the headlines, a troubled gas processing plant to be shut down today. Chairman of Government Assurance Committee of Parliament says dual role of some members does not compromise work of the House. Investigation into death of four Ghanaians in Hebron, South Africa commences. 11 men sentenced to death in Egypt for 2012 football riot which left 73 people dead. And designer of Ghana's national flag, Theodosia Okon, dead. The news in detail. The program manager of Star Ghana, Ibrahim Tanko, is charged Parliament to do more in performing its oversight responsibility. He said though the 6th Parliament of the 4th Republic is doing its best, more needs to be done. Mr. Tanko, who made the comment on GBC's current affairs program Talking Point, implored other players in the governance sector, such as the Auditor General and the Attorney General's Department, to step up their game to help Parliament to effectively perform its role.
The issue of oversight, when we look at it in isolation, we are looking at Parliament's work without taking cognizance of the fact that to be effective, other players within the governance environment also should be playing their part. So the Auditor General's work feeds into the work of Parliament. Parliament's work also feeds into the work of the judiciary, etc. So if that chain is not working properly, then you might find out that, well, public accounts can do all the public hearings that they want, but nothing comes out of it. So one way of looking at this whole thing about oversight is to start looking at the linkages, the relationships between Parliament and other actors in the governance landscape, and to see the extent to which we can strengthen those relationships to ensure that things move on from one part to the other. I think the second is really the whole issue of how well we citizens of this country also take an interest in the work of Parliament, that we can also ask them questions. It's not only Parliament that should oversight the executive, but we should also oversight the work of Parliament. One, feeding them with the reports. So if you're talking about education and the Select Committee of Education is doing whatever around it, we are the ones on the ground and we should be able to provide the kind of evidence that they require to do that. But the other aspect of it is asking them questions. So after your work on education, after your monitoring visit, what has come out of it? After your public hearing on the accounts, what has come out of it? That if we ask sufficiently, and I think this is where the media also has a very important role to play, that's to take the issue, to follow it up, to stick to it, until we get the answers. And then you let us know, we the citizens, and then come election time or whatever, we're also able to provide our oversight of their work by voting appropriately.
The chairman of Government Assurance Committee, Emmanuel Bedra, debunked the perception that Parliament is usually compromised when members are appointed to the executive arm of government. He said there is no conflict of interest since the committees are made up of both majority and minority.
I don't see anything wrong with whatever we have in the constitution, just as my colleague has said. But talking to some of my colleagues, they think that the recommendation made by the Constitution Review Committee that the president can select or nominate from members of parliament to become ministers without any cap, any ceiling on it, is enough so that the president can select whether two or three or the 50 plus or more than the 50 plus if he so wish, so that there will not be any ceiling or any cap on it. What do I say that? Colleagues who are members of parliament, who are ministers of state, who are on our committee, come there as members of the committee. They don't influence us at all. In fact, we have the rules of the house, which is the standing orders. You go by the standing orders and go by the constitution. If you are doing anything against the constitution, you'll be held accountable as a chairman and as a member of that committee. So I don't see any conflict there that because the majority of ministers are coming from parliament, they will have any influence on us as committee members or as parliament, the two terms that have been in parliament. And I've not seen any minister influencing us at all.
Even though it's influencing, are you critical on them?
We are so critical. In fact, look at Governor Ashram, my committee, for instance. If any committee, a chairman of a party in government, calling his own colleague ministers to question them about their promises, I mean, what again do you want?
That's okay. I mean, you can call them, you can invite them to question them about promises, but the rate at which you can do with the questioning, the manner at which you move along with the questioning is also the question here. Because if you call your own colleague and you question them about promises,
yes,
you have to ensure that those promises have been
carried out.
If they have nothing carried out, would you have that kind of strength also to...
That is why it's called a committee on government assurance. You make sure you pursue.
For his part, the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Kukwajima Imenu, said despite some challenges, the works of the committees are yielding positive results. He noted that Parliament is independent, and for that matter, the dual roles some members play does not affect their oversight responsibility.
When this issue of check mandates was brought up, within 2 years, huge amounts of money have been paid in respect of check mandates. Immediately, this hit the airwaves through our public hearings, and we started calling people and Wayumi, CP, the land compensation issues and all that. From that time up to today, there may still be elements of check mandates, and it has come down quite drastically if you compare it to what previously happened. We go around the country meeting with headmasters and school accountants, looking into what reports have come from them, how they dispense and manage school funds and things like that. And I must tell you, for the last few years that we started this program, this is one we go to state in public in the various zones that we have to market it for ourselves. When they are coming there, go for special prayers. They just don't want to see eye to eye with Public Accounts Committee at all. So when we meet with them, keep on telling them that if you do your work well and auditors don't cite you for any breaches of the administration, the financial administrative regulations and things like that, you wouldn't meet us. And I must tell you, when we go these days, some schools that have not been cited will have nothing to do with the Public Accounts Committee at all. In the past, some will not even prepare their annual accounts to enable the auditor even to audit. These days, that thing is getting out entirely. They didn't have audit report implementation committees. These days, all of them have got them. The MDAs and things like that. So you see, by virtue of my just public appearances, certain things that were not being done are now being done.
Those were panelists on GBC's current affairs program Talking Point on the oversight responsibility of Parliament. The Ghana Journalists Association has ruled out any possibility of accepting the reintroduction of the criminal libel law. There have been growing concerns about abuses in the media which go without punishment. The problem is compounded by the upsurge in social media, which are not regulated in any way. The situation has led to some calls for the amendment of existing laws to include social media, while others have called for the reintroduction of the infamous criminal libel law. But the president of the GGA, Afil Money, says that is far-fetched. He urged media practitioners to be guided by the provisions of the Constitution, which impose some obligations on them.
I believe you can fall on the supreme law of the land, that's our constitution. And whilst Article 162 and 163 of our constitution give us all the space to operate as journalists, Article 164 imposes national security, national morality, and public order restrictions on the media. I believe this restriction should also cover social media activism, because perpetration of falsehood is a crime, and spreading fear and panic is also a crime. Said that our law enforcement committee has been a bit relaxed in this respect, but what is happening now reinforces the need for the law enforcement agencies, for traditional media activists, and for the regulators of a media landscape to amplify loud and clear that perpetration of falsehood and other forms of illegalities, even in the social media, can and should attract punishment. The criminal libel law should perpetually be consigned to the dustbin of history, because it's symptomatic of our dark days, culture of silence and all that. And we don't need to set the past against the present. Otherwise, we will stand the risk of losing the future. I believe what is happening now reinforces the need for us. We cannot reinvent the wheel, even though there's a need for us to sentence certain aspects of our code of ethics. But by and large, we cannot reinvent the wheel. What we have, you know, there's a need for us to understand, internalize the present principles and reflect them in other peer media or traditional media. So there's a need for us to understand. In addition to factual accuracy, this is a basic fundamental principle which should not be compromised under any circumstances, because journalism is not the perpetration of falsehood, but the dissemination of defendable facts. So the facts cannot be verified. If you haven't cross-checked your facts, why put it in the public domain? And if we look at balance and fairness, this also applies to social media activists. So there are some few areas we need to sentence in response to the present circumstances. But by and large, we can go with the traditional principles which underpin our profession.
That was the president of the Ghana Journalists Association, Afil Money. The Ministry of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation is to roll out a national program to convert human waste from the 800 senior high schools into renewable energy sources. The program, which will be implemented this year in collaboration with the Ministry of Education and the Ghana Education Service, is intended to cut down on the consumption of wood energy to biogas. The Sector Minister, Mahama Yarga, announced this when he toured some of the agencies under the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in Accra. The visit was to familiarize himself with the operations of CSIR. He said Ghana uses 42 million tons of wood annually. Sir Yarga observed that Ghana's addiction to the importation of technology is the bane of the country's economy, adding that until that addiction is addressed, the economy would always be under pressure. He said everything is being imported into the country, and this has put so much pressure on the currency. To address the situation, Mr. Yarga underscored the need for the scientific community to shift their attention to inventing commercially viable innovations that would improve businesses and accelerate development. The provost of the College of Distance Education of the University of Cape Coast, Professor George Odru, has expressed concern about the poor academic performance of students of Agona South from the Central Region. He said over the years, the performance in the BCE, especially in English and mathematics, have been nothing worth writing home about. Speaking to Radio Ghana after donating stationery and a multipurpose photocopier to the Agona South Community Library, Professor Odru called on philanthropists to assist the community with the needed resources to enhance learning.
We want young children, primary school children, to develop the skills for reading, which has become a challenge in our district. The performance of pupils in the BEC hasn't been the best. And we think that if the culture of reading through libraries is developed in children,
that was the provost of the College of Distance Education, University of Cape Coast, Professor George Odru. The head pastor of Change Life Baptist Church, Reverend Prince Achin, has bemoaned the church's failure to encourage discipleship. He said the church has rather become a breeding ground for immoral acts among Christians. Reverend Achin blamed this on the self-mentorship of modern-day pastors would not allow the Holy Spirit to lead them, but rather resort to preaching according to the dictates of the flesh. Reverend Achin was speaking at the launch of the 40th anniversary of the church in Accra. Godwin Alorewa and Priscilla Numnoy had filed this report.
The head pastor of the Change Life Baptist Church, Reverend Prince Achin, said to curb immorality among Christians, young pastors should go through adequate training. He assured the congregation of good leadership.
If you look at the life of Jesus, he has to be 30 years before God started using him. But today, many people just rise up. They think they have the call. They pick up a Bible. And then they go into ministry. And then they go and mess up and they blackmail everybody's name.
Reverend Prince Achin outlined some activities the church is undertaking to mark the anniversary, which includes winning 500 souls for Christ before the end of the year, and organizing social visits to charity homes and prisons to propagate the gospel to the inmates.
We commissioned Project 500, which is to win 500 souls by 2016. To bring people into the house of God, to come to study the word. While the world is going now, there is no hope. The only hope is Jesus Christ. We are going to do a social duty, which is to visit either prisons, people's homes, or some mental retarded home where we can go and visit the people, spend time with them, give them gifts, and share the word of God with them.
Reverend Prince Achin said the church has also built a pastoral school which has trained 54 ministers of the gospel and operates a radio ministry which helps to spread the word of God.
A report by Gordon Alorewe and Priscilla Numnoy. The Deputy Eastern Regional Minister, Mavis Rimpong, has commended the Presbyterian Church of Ghana for its track record in discipline, as well as its contribution to the social, economic, health, and educational development of the country. She called on the clergy to use their authority to help curb social cankers such as indiscipline, immorality, moral decadence, and corruption among the youth in Ghana. Madame Frimpong's service when she officially opened the 43rd Presbytery of the Achimi Buakwa Presbytery of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana at Asamankese in the East Achim Municipality. She commended the church for setting up various schools to help in the educational sector. She said these schools can be used as a starting point in solving indiscipline and moral decadence among the youth. Madame Frimpong disclosed that some major roads that link Asamankese have been captured under the Koko Road Fund, with others to follow soon. The Member of Parliament for the area, Gifty Klenam, urged the congregation to desist from exhibiting political colors and come together to pray for the government in power as well as the well-being of the economy to reflect the lives in the lives of Ghanaians. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major stories. A troubled gas processing plant to be shut down today. Chairman of Government Assurance Committee of Parliament says dual role of some members do not compromise work of the House. Investigation into death of four Ghanaians in Hebron, South Africa commences. 11 men sentenced to death in Egypt for 2012 football riot, which left 73 people dead. And designer of Ghana's national flag, Theodosia Okun, is dead. We are back after this break. Please stay with us. Welcome back. The gas processing plant at Atuabo in the Western Region will be shut down from today for the next 10 days for mandatory maintenance works. The plant began processing gas on the Jubilee fields last November, producing about 60 million standard cubic feet of gas daily at its commissioning stage. It has increased production to 80 million standard cubic feet daily since it started commercial production at the beginning of this month. The plant operated by the Ghana Gas Company supplies gas to the Volta River Authority, which it uses to power its thermal plant at Abuazi for the generation of 400 megawatts of electricity daily. The company also supplies LPG to the domestic market. CEO of the company, George Sipayanki, in a statement said, "The shutdown is necessary to prolong the lifespan of the plant and for warranty security." With the shutdown, coupled with a delay in the arrival of the emergency power badges, there are fears that it will lead to further worsening of the power situation in the country. But the VIA has dispelled such fears. According to the authority, it has enough quantities of light crude oil in stock, which it will use to power the thermal plant in the absence of gas. PRO of the VIA, Sam Fletcher, says the shutdown of the Atuabo gas plant cannot therefore have any impact on the current load schedule. Four regions are to benefit from a five-year project aimed at strengthening the newborn children's health care in every district. The regions are the Eastern, Ashanti, Volta, and Bonoafo. The project, dubbed Making Every Baby Count Initiative, MEBCI, is being sponsored by the Project for Appropriate Technology in Health, which is a wing of USAID. The Eastern Regional Director of Health Services, Dr. Charity Sapong, who stated that the program began in July last year and is expected to end in 2018. She said the MEBCI project is to ensure that at least 90% of children born receive adequate newborn care to avoid challenges like asphyxia and breathing problems on the first 7 days of birth. The project, Dr. Sapo noted, will also help to address problems with Millennium Development Goals 4 and 5. She said training and other programs will be provided towards the capacity building of health personnel to enhance the success of the MEBCI project. Ghana's embassy in South Africa has sent an officer to Hebron in Free State. In a message on her Facebook page, Foreign Minister Hannah Tete noted that per the embassy's information, Hebron has not recorded any incident of xenophobic attacks. According to her, the police have confirmed the deaths, but the cause of the death could not be immediately ascertained. Meanwhile, interim police reports indicate that the salon where the persons were found was locked. They had to break into the salon before they found the four deceased, who were all foaming from the mouth. Meanwhile, an international relations and conflict management expert at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, LESIAD, Dr. Kenhouse, says he does not foresee any reprisal attacks against South Africans in Ghana following xenophobic attacks against African migrants, including Ghanaians in that country. There has been Security has been beefed up in and around the South African High Commission in Accra in the wake of the violence in South Africa, in which at least four Ghanaians are reportedly killed. The police say the move is to increase security at the High Commission. It's a proactive one to prevent any eventualities. Dr. Ahosu told Radio Ghana that though there are a lot of South African businesses in Ghana, he does not believe any Ghanaian will go to the extent of attacking South Africans in Ghana. He said what is important is for the South African authorities to, as a matter of urgency, rein in its rampaging youth.
The most important thing is that the South African one cannot be taken in isolation. The issues that are being raised have to be analyzed properly. In the first place, there is a wide gap between the leaders, their form of camaraderie or relationship that exists between them, president and president, and the sort of protocols and integration projects that we have. The masses are left out when it comes to their input in terms of the protocols, arrangement, policies that are made in uniting Africa, in developing Africa. So you will see that what is happening in South Africa is not a case of isolation. We have a similar thing which almost sprang up in Ghana when Ghanaians began rebelling against Nigerian visitors or migrants and people who were in retail business. In the same way, when you see Ghana sometimes trying to export certain things to Nigeria, Nigeria said that it's not acceptable for some commodities from Ghana to be exported to Nigeria. So the question then is that what is the problem? The problem simply means that Africans have not been able to develop mechanisms and policies as to what raise the standard of living of their people, providing them with jobs, shelter, and the things that are necessary. So it is out of this, the intersubjective meanings of this or the difficulties whereby people feel that once migrants are gone, then the citizens of the country will have enough. We have the same thing happening in Cote d'Ivoire from 1995 when they had the devaluation of the city. That was how this concept of Ivoirite emerged. We've seen it to some extent in Kenya, and we've seen it in Egypt, we've seen it all over the place. So what is important is that now that we say we have embraced democracy, what is important is that we must speak to our people. The masses, their needs must be addressed. It is only when we have a bottom-up approach in terms of meeting the needs of our people, and that meeting the needs of our people from the bedrock of our integration policies, that these type of issues can be resolved.
International relations and conflict management experts at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, Dr. Ken Ahosu. An Egyptian court has sentenced 11 men to death for their involvement in a 2012 football riot in the city of Port Said, in which 73 people died and at least 1,000 were injured. The presiding judge, Mohamed Al-Said Mohamed, however, said the decision still requires the approval of Egypt's most senior religious authority, the Grand Mufti. Also, the convicts can also appeal, a process that may take several years. In Egypt, the Grand Mufti's decision is not binding, but referral is needed in order to impose the death sentence. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has led calls for more European action on sea migration after the latest deadly capsize of a boat in the Mediterranean. Mr. Renzi said trafficking is a plague on the continent and bemoaned the lack of European solidarity. A 70-foot-long boat was believed to be carrying about 700 migrants, and only 28 survivors have been rescued. Up to 1,500 migrants are now feared to have drowned this year alone. Human smugglers are taking advantage of the political crisis in Libya, using it as a launching point for boats carrying migrants who are fleeing violence or economic hardship in Africa and the Middle East. The Minister of Communications, Dr. Edward Omanigbuama, says the President has demonstrated a number of times his commitment to observing constitutional responsibilities. Therefore, Nanado's call for him to wider consultation in the appointment of new EC boss is without merit. Speaking to Radio Ghana, Dr. Omanigbuama said government remains focused in executing its agenda. He advised members of NPP to rather focus on their campaign rather than engaging in such diversionary tactics.
The president, as we speak now, has not demonstrated through even the slightest whisper that he is not going to respect the dictates of the 1992 constitution. Here is a president who swore an oath on 7th of January 2013 at his swearing in. The president will abide by the constitution. It doesn't lie in the mouth of Nana Akufo-Addo to dictate what the practice of the constitution should be. All we will say is that the president has always respected the constitution of the Republic of Ghana. He will do same in this particular instance. But Nana Akufo-Addo, sensing an electoral defeat in 2016, basically just wants to prepare the ground for another Supreme Court showdown.
That's interesting, but perhaps Nana Akufo-Addo is only reinforcing what is expected of the president constitutionally.
So there's no need. But listen to him carefully and listen to the New Patriotic Party. They are sensing electoral defeat in 2016. Even if the president appoints President Akufo as the electoral commission chair, don't be surprised if Nana Akufo-Addo has something wrong with that. And so the president will continue to respect the constitution of the Republic of Ghana. Government will keep its eyes on the ball, and the ball here is development in an atmosphere of rule of law. President Mahama, it is not in his nature to go against the constitution of the Republic of Ghana. It is not in his nature. He is an honest person. He is a gentleman, and he will do just what the constitution dictates. I will advise the MPP to redirect their energies into their campaign, because 2016 is just around the corner. They have elected their flag bearer for some months back. They are campaigning, yet their campaign is not clicking. They should just focus on their campaign, tie their loose ends, whilst we continue delivering to the good people of Ghana.
Minister of Communications, Dr. Edward Omane Boama. The designer of Ghana's national flag, Theodosia Salome Okun, is dead. She was 92. Theodosia Salome Okun was born on June 13, 1922. The Ghanaian stateswoman was born to the very Reverend Emmanuel Victor Esihene, a former moderator of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana, and Madame Dora Esihene, both from Enum in the Eastern Region. She is the fourth of eight children. She started school at Ashanti Fijansi Primary School, continued to the Basel Mission Middle, Senior and Teacher Training Schools in Ago, and then to Archimota School. Now to end the news, another look at our headlines. The Atobo gas processing plant is to be shut down today for the next 10 days for mandatory maintenance works. According to the CEO of the company, Dr. Josie Payanke, the statement, the shutdown is necessary to prolong the lifespan of the plant and for warranty security. The chairman of the Government Assurance Committee of Parliament, Emmanuel Bedra, says the dual role of some members of the House do not compromise its work. Speaking on JBC's current affairs program Talking Point, Mr. Bedra debunked the perception that Parliament is usually compromised when members are appointed to the executive arm of government. And investigation into the death of four Ghanaians in Hebron, South Africa, has commenced. The news was presented by Abraham Donko in Accra.